You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. Today, we have a treat for you. We have in the studio with us Dr. Desi Baharaja, the Chief Medical Innovation Officer of Aynka Health Group. Dr. Desi is a rather renowned epidemiologist in the country who has been covering the issue of COVID-19, the pandemic, and the national health system for quite a bit now. So it's important for us to have a chat with him this evening. Dr. Desi, thanks again for speaking to us or taking time to speak with us. I want to talk to you a little bit more about the IPPC, or the International Pandemic Preparedness Center. It's a collaboration between Aynka Health Group as well as MUFG Research Body. Let's talk a little bit more about what IPPC aims to do and where is it at right now.
Thank you, Ibrahim. So basically, the idea of the International Pandemic Preparedness Center was always close to my heart since 2015. I think, Ibrahim, as you know, my work revolves around dengue, Zika previously, and how can we use artificial intelligence to actually combat vector-borne disease. But what I realized was, while I was doing the work on dengue and Zika, I realized that, you know, we are very much specific towards solving a particular problem, which was dengue and Zika at that time, during 2015-2016. When you talk about infectious disease, it can infect anyone. And secondly, the moment it affects a country or a person, it just wipes out the population as well as the economy. That was one of the reason why, I thought there is a need, there is a global need for countries to have a unified infectious disease platform whereby you can track, you can trace, you can predict, as well as you can mitigate. So that's just one of the reason, Ibrahim. The second reason, I think, why the whole spirit or the motivation gets even stronger today is, I think I've also mentioned on my Twitter that I just lost my dad to COVID-19. He's a medical doctor as well, and it was about 30 or 40 days ago. So I think this whole commitment to global health reform, it's part of me, and I thought that the best way to do it is to kickstart with the International Pandemic Preparedness Center.
Okay, so the International Preparedness Center, or Pandemic Preparedness Center, IPPC, is a collaboration between MURC, which is Mitsubishi UFJ Research and Consulting, and Aynka Health. And of course, this focuses on AI, artificial intelligence, trying to detect vector disease as well as pandemics, possible pandemics. How is it being funded? Is it fully by MUFJ?
So basically, the collaboration now between Aynka and MUFJ is mainly focusing on infectious disease in low middle income countries and middle income countries. So the whole mechanism of funding, networks, human resources is going to be somehow shared between these two entities. And Aynka Group is also looking into other partners, for example, tech companies. I can't mention what tech companies now, but we are looking into creating the whole partnership, whole ecosystem, because we believe that Aynka alone, or Desi alone, or a famous Nobel Prize winner in an infectious disease alone will not be able to solve this whole global threat, I would say. So hence, for the first baby step, what we thought was partnering with Mitsubishi. Why Mitsubishi? Because if you see Mitsubishi, under Mitsubishi, they have this thing called the Global Health Architecture. So what they focus on, they focus mainly on infectious disease as well as non-communicable disease, but mainly on low middle income and middle income country. So I think this collaboration mainly is to make the talent and a bank. I would say Mitsubishi is one of the five largest bank in the world as well, if you see. So what we're trying to collaborate here is to make sure the talent, the pool of talent, the data scientists, the epidemiologists, the computer scientists guys all come on board together with Mitsubishi's Mitsubishi strength in terms of network, in terms of grant, in terms of funding. So how can we work together actually to solve or to build this International Pandemic Preparedness
Center? So does this also mean that on top of collaboration with future talents, you're also open to funding rounds in the future, including from venture capital that might be interested in healthcare?
Yeah, so the whole point of this, again, International Pandemic Preparedness Center, if you see, let's take one step back. Public health has always been a responsibility for the government. You know, people... people assume that public health is government's responsibility. But the whole point why it fails is because there's no sustainable financing model to support this whole public health systems, especially when it comes to neglected tropical diseases, infectious diseases, vector-borne diseases, food and water-borne diseases. So what we're trying to do now is we're trying to create a sustainable financial model to support this unified infectious disease platform, which is driven by AI. So to answer your question directly, are we open to investors, whether it's angel investors, whether it's venture capitalists? The answer is yes.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about your role as an epidemiologist in trying to build something that has anything remotely to do with AI. You have rightfully pointed out diversified talents, including computer programmers, software engineers, perhaps even people who understand how cultures work, how they interact and behave. Everything has to be brought together, and we're looking at massive, massive investments into the talent, into the kind of pooling of resources to make it work. There has to be a central figure in trying to make this happen. Is this central figure the people in AINCA, or will there be somebody else being brought in to ensure that there's some smooth pooling of talents into producing something that is AI, but towards preparing for pandemics?
Yeah. So what we are doing now is fundamentally it will be run by AINCA Group, but we are also getting external advisors from WHO, from local governments, foreign governments. So we are still we are practically framing this whole advisory role, I would say, which will complete, I think, somewhere early next month.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about the focus area that you want to do this. You're mentioning low and middle income countries. I would assume Malaysia not being part of it, or?
To kickstart this, I think our focus as soon as we launch IPPC, because the platform is currently about 40% ready. So we have already got interest from countries like Sierra Leone, Guinea, Sri Lanka. So these are the first few countries that we are going to work with.
All right. So let's work through with how it will look like upon completion or upon ready rollout. How does it work, basically?
Okay, so the interesting part about IPPC is we are trying to solve few problems. Problem number one is, when I give you the problem, then I can tell you how the application works, right? So the first problem, if you see most disease surveillance today, the digital system that is supposed to do the surveillance are very disease specific. So you have dengue surveillance system, then you have malaria surveillance system, it's very disease specific. So there is no central database that actually does all the analytics in one engine. So that's the first problem. So we don't have a unified infectious disease platform, which is disease agnostic instead of disease specific. So IPPC will have one of the largest infectious disease module, where any country can key in any types of infectious disease in their own reporting system, because data entry or data ingestion is very important. So that's the first, I would say, important component. The second important component under IPPC is something we call the Power Lens. So Power Lens is responsible to produce all the AI-driven analytics, meaning prediction of a disease, where it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, the magnitude of the disease or the problem, whether the health capacity can cope, how many beds are needed, how many ventilators are needed, so how many tests should be done in a country. So this whole Power Lens, the brain of the Power Lens, is driven by AI to drive all this analytics. So this analytics is driven by data that is being ingested through our infectious disease platform, as well as our external data pipeline comes in from variables such as weather, wind speed, wind direction, humidity, emigration, immigration rate, flights, probably even the purchase of condoms, the usage of condoms. So we are gathering like more than 5,000 data points we are looking at to actually come up with a very strong Power Lens. So that's the second part. The third part of IPPC is going to be R3. So R3 is something we call, R3 is known as rapid research response. So if you see, Ibrahim, conventionally what happens is when you face an outbreak today, it takes time for us to report an outbreak, because by the time, as a physician, by the time you write a case, by the time you submit to a journal, you know, sometimes by the time you get peer-reviewed, it takes about 3 months, 6 months before it gets published. So the rapid research response R3 component, which is part of IPPC, will be peer-reviewed and it will be published within 5 days, 5 working days. So if one doctor is actually seeing a very unique or weird symptoms in Argentina, in 5 days' time, the same another doctor in Indonesia or in Philippines will be able to access that research. So that's how actually we are combining the whole IPPC. Now, the final component is something called the IPPC FX, which is International Pandemic Preparedness Financing. So how that works is we are in the midst of talking to big banks of the world. We are also talking to, you know, foundations, non-profits, on how they can channel, instead of just pumping money or throwing money for CSR, how they can channel this money through IPPC financing so that we can actually assist low middle income countries, middle income countries, not just in technology, but also in terms of funding to control the outbreaks.
You see, your training as an epidemiologist intersects with the fact that you're a public healthcare physician. You were there with MOH during the first, 9 months of the pandemic outbreak. You've seen how the health systems were put to stress. Yeah. And it's not that doctors don't know what to do. They know exactly what needs to be done. It's not that the politicians didn't know what to do. They know exactly what needs to be done. But the political will to get it done is going to be problematic. We've seen governments change. We've seen how budgets were meant to be allocated were not allocated. Budgets that were already allocated, but the money never did come. You know, these kind of problems that you've seen with your own eyes in Malaysia, could it be postulated that the countries that you were going to, you operate in, Sierra Leone, Sri Lanka, you name
going
it.
Going to, yeah.
It's going to be the same issues, and therefore you're going to face a lot of frustration because you already have that power lens that you speak of. You know how the severity can be, the intensity and so on. But how does that marry into action, particularly when countries with, you know, low to middle income status might have already problems elsewhere in the government, let alone in the public healthcare system of those countries.
So yeah, that's definitely an ongoing challenge, and that's the reason why they say public health is about social justice.
Yeah.
So that's a very, very important point that you brought up, Ibrahim. So I think how do we solve this is, hence we are trying to go into countries that is more towards, that is still greenfield. Because countries that are already brownfield, meaning that, you know, they already have some systems, they have a siloed system, it's kind of difficult to actually go in and convince them directly, also to convince the politicians or the policymakers. So what we are doing is we are trying to go into countries that are still in the greenfield. Basically, they have no proper systems, no data flow, no data capture and all those things. So when we go in, we start from the very basic phase, that is data collection. So how do we do data collection? How do we digitize? How do we get the infrastructure up to make sure that data are ingested properly into the system? Subsequently, then we talk about power lens, because we won't just go in and say we're going to give you the best prediction and tell you when and where the outbreak is going to happen. I think that's not the modus operandi here.
Why not? Because that's the whole purpose of doing this.
No, because I think when we go in, because the ultimate aim of IPPC is not just to sell predictions or to just provide predictions, but it's actually to change the whole disease surveillance ecosystem. So in order to do that, we have to take the baby steps to make sure that we, first and foremost, we create the data pipelines of all the health providers, meaning that how does the GP report in the event he sees an infectious disease? The primary care, the secondary care, the tertiary care. So the data flow is so important, because only then power lens will play the role. Because if we are going to jump in and sell a product that says that, you know, we're just going to give you the best prediction in the world, you're going to solve your problem, I think exactly what you said, that's not going to work. Because first, it's going to be difficult in convincing policymakers about that. And secondly, I think not having the right data flow will not give a good accuracy in terms of prediction as well for the power lens.
Okay. We'll go for one break before we continue our conversation with Dr. Desi of AINCA. Welcome back. I have with me Dr. Desi Baharaja, the Chief Medical Innovation Officer of AINCA. We're here talking about IPPC, or the Pandemic Center. Let's talk a little bit more about how this item came about. You were talking about vector-borne diseases. My own son suffered from JE many, many years ago. It was a horrible event. We almost lost him multiple times, actually. But he's around, and being a naughty boy that he is now, it doesn't come to the consciousness of a person until it happens to she or he himself. And when we talk about your late father and his passing, I think the country mourned together with you, particularly when he was being in ICU for three over weeks. And to have a son that is in the front and center of this conversation, it must be tough on you. My question is that this is how, if the world will end, or if the human species is going to be wiped out, it's not going to be a zombie apocalypse or some alien invasion. It's going to be the microscopic pathogens, and most probably something very similar to a coronavirus. And it seems like the whole country, the whole world is ready to combat this. And then they forget. And then they move on, and then research into this area is going to dry up. Money that is going to be spent into crisis preparedness center is just going to be reallocated to other pressing items of the day. All of which I don't blame the government, not just this government, but governments around the world. How do you ensure that something like this continues to be at the forefront of everybody's minds, particularly in a situation where once, say for instance, COVID-19 pandemic has subsided, we still have to work on it and think hard on it, just like we are thinking hard about all the other stuff, climate change, energy crisis, and all the other stuff. We're here changing the world, so how do we make sure that we, you know?
So I think, sadly, sometimes when it comes to infectious disease, the governments of the world has always been consistently inconsistent. so you know, and that's the toughest part, because even if you see the World Health Organization previously, most budget were allocated for non-communicable disease. And even though we went through MERS, we went through SARS, we went through Ebola, I mean, the whole idea of, you know...
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. So
and then we forget.
Yeah, we human beings, we tend to forget, you know, the...
Even SARS, maybe not Ebola, but Ebola is so far away, we read about it, like, we watch it in movies, but SARS is just around the corner.
Correct. And it's a global problem, you know, every government, like you said, it's not just any this government or any government, it's government of the world, they tend to, you know, reprioritize based on their budgets and all that. But fundamentally, I think if we want to live, healthier, I mean, besides non-communicable disease, like I said, I think we have to have a system in place. So the global health reform needs to happen today. And when I say global health reform today, Ibrahim, you know, like what Bill Gates says, in the next few decades, millions are more likely to die not due to war or missiles, but microbes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, knowing that this is a fact, you know, and we have spoken about this in the year of, in the 90s, in 2000, in 2015, we still fail to invest in public health. I think that's one of the biggest challenges. And why we fail, Ibrahim, if you ask me, it's because people, like I said earlier, people think infectious disease, disease surveillance, public health is the responsibility of the government. So if you see tech companies today, everyone is focused on the curative platform because the money is there. I would want to build an electronic medical record solution because I can sell to private hospitals. You know, I would like to build an IoT, Internet of Things medical device because I can sell directly to a B2C concept.
Absolutely.
So when you talk about B2G, people usually shy off because like...
Unless you're a defense contractor or something like that.
Yes, exactly.
It's very difficult.
It's very difficult. So I think this under, if you talk about under the business segment, I think that's the biggest challenge for anyone who wants to innovate when it comes to do with epidemiology or public health or infectious disease. We hardly see those kind of innovation. Most like I
funny
said,
because you're in all three. So
yes, yes. Correct. Yeah. So if you talk about preventive, promotive, predictive, we see very less investment. But when you talk about curative, There's a lot of money going in there. And again, when you talk about rehabilitative and palliative, again, there's less money there. So if you see throughout the spectrum there, right? So how do you do it? I think what's important today is, I hope, you know, with this COVID, I think it will struck people that we should find ways, new business model, new pathways, new methodologies on how can we allow public-private partnership, Ibrahim. The biggest challenge here is when we think that the government knows all.
They know nothing.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges.
Let alone all.
Yeah, and either would I say the private sector knows everything as well. Right?
No, they know nothing either.
Yeah, either. So hence, this whole public-private partnership needs to happen, and not just by signing MOUs.
I agree. So that somebody knows something, yeah, instead of everybody knowing everything.
Exactly. So for this, even this Mitsubishi, it's not just going to end in MOU. I strongly, you know, when we had this discussion among ourselves, among Ainka Group and Mitsubishi, we said that the platform needs to be ready. In the next 3 months, I think the platform will be ready 100%. The first client needs to be secured at least this year. So when I say this year, why? Because we need to show the world that, you see, government, how government works is, if government A uses, or maybe government B will feel comfortable.
Yeah, it's a wait-and-see approach.
It's a wait-and-see approach. Yeah. So hence, we're actually working towards that. Yeah. But you talk about sustainability, I think, Ibrahim, it's a tough game when it comes to preventive, predictive, promotive in public health and infectious disease. Hence, you don't see a public listed company that does infectious disease surveillance, but you see public listed company that does digital health, electronic medical records.
But it doesn't matter if you guys are so good, people will look at you.
Yeah.
If you look about it, nobody wants to intensively look at electric vehicles, for instance, not until Tesla came about and Elon Musk pushed through.
Yeah.
Now, every single car company, every single government wants to do electric vehicles, so much so that there's a tipping point. Some estimates are saying that electric vehicles will match the production of internal gasoline, combustion engine. Yeah. By 2025, which is just 4 years away. It's like, if you want the thing to happen organically, it'll never happen organically. Yeah. So I'm rooting for you guys. I'm rooting for Ainka, for this IPPC to work. But at the same time, that aggressive investment of time and energy and money, of course, into this has to continue.
Yeah.
My biggest problem is that with this, it's noble, it's good. But my biggest worry for you guys is that research will have to be ongoing and it has to be continuous. And investments will not keep up with the requirements for research. What will happen to you guys if halfway through the research process, investment dries up? Is that a possibility that you guys are facing right now?
I would say not really, because, I mean, like I said earlier, in 2015, when I first was working on dengue and Zika, it was a hard time. R&D was, you know, we had to do R&D and there was lack of investment. People didn't see, you know, infectious disease being a problem. But today, honestly, Ibrahim, I was surprised that the money that we have raised, just because people are aware that, you know, COVID is real. The next infectious disease is real. So the moment when the IPPC idea came up, immediately Mitsubishi and few others they showed interest. And what's important here, I think, is while we are doing R&Ds, I think we are also trying to help governments, and we are not going to charge, you know, there's no, like, in terms of business model, we are not looking at upfront costs and all that. What we are thinking of is looking into like a consumption model whereby, you know, countries can pay 0.05 cents per transaction or 0.03 cents. Because at the end of the day, it's about creating a sustainability and making sure that Ainka Group's R&D is staying alive, staying afloat, I would say, as well as solving the global grand challenges. So I'll go back to what you just said. People might say it's difficult. People might say it's impossible, Ibrahim. Like when Elon Musk wanted to, you know, come up with a reusable rocket, everyone said it's almost impossible to do a reusable rocket. When he said about Tesla having to solve the sustainable energy and also our green energy, everyone said it's impossible, he's going to lose money, no one is going to buy electric cars. But I believe IPPC will definitely create a change, and governments one day will realize. I think now itself we are seeing governments putting a lot more investment in infectious disease. I believe this will definitely be a game changer. And because no one is actually looking at this space now, everyone is so interested, like I said, in the curative space, I think this is the time for us to do it now.
Fantastic. I really wish you guys all the best. And when it's up and running, please come to the show again. We'll definitely have more conversations on this. That was our conversation with Dr. Desi Baharaja, the Chief Medical Innovation Officer at Ayanka Health Group. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawani.com. Look for Notepad over there. There are plenty of interviews like this that can be found there. Till then, thanks very much for watching and continue to stay with us on astroawani.com.